Hello, and welcome to Selective Hearing, a space for honesty, healing, and transformation. I'm Julie DeMar, author, filmmaker, and host of this podcast. We've all practiced selective hearing. This podcast is about more than just a conversation. It's about breaking barriers, fostering understanding, and stepping into the best versions of ourselves. So take a deep breath, open your heart, and join me. What does selective hearing mean to you? Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another meaningful episode of Selective Hearing. I'm your host, Julie DeMar, and today I am here with Jonathan Marion. I didn't butcher your name. Did I get it right?
That's exactly right.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Look, no name butchers this Monday. So today I am going to have a deep and powerful conversation with Jonathan about what it means to tune out the noise of societal expectations, learning to listen to what's coming from inside of you. Jonathan is a transformational life coach, but he is also a former award-winning professor in cultural anthropology. Look at all these big words for me today. He spent over two decades in researching intersections of personality, culture, and psychology. So, Jonathan, it is a pleasure to have you here with me today.
Pleasure to be with you, Julie. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. So what I do is, in the very beginning of the show, I just give you the mic and I ask you to please share your story with the listeners.
Yeah, so the briefest version is that I just grew up in a family where I took the academic route as for granted as what I was going to do. And so even though I took some time off after undergrad to travel and, you know, work a couple of jobs, then I never even questioned going to graduate school and getting first my master's and then my doctorate. And as you said, I spent over 20 years as a cultural anthropology professor. And then it was actually while I was on a research trip visiting Brazil and staying in Rio de Janeiro, not one of the tourist areas for a research project, but I was staying with a good friend, that I happened to be sitting in his living room and realizing that the small little back bedroom he let me stay in very generously was smaller than the closet of my master suite at my house. And yet I felt more at home in this small, more humble apartment. And it really challenged me to go, what is that about? That was really the beginning of the shift for me to realize that in Brazil, my friends knew me, and maybe they knew what I did professionally, and maybe they were proud of me or proud for me, but they didn't actually care about the accomplishments. They loved me, the person, and that I was never going to live that life as long as I stayed in academia or any other domain where it's all about the external accolades, and that the measures of success are all things that are, you know, latest publications, latest grants, latest evaluations. And that really spurred me to examine what I wanted to do and, you know, led to the shift that now has me as a transformational life coach and speaker.
I love that. There's something that I left out, ladies and gentlemen, and I am going to highlight this right now too. You are a nomad. So Let's add that to your list of accomplishments. I would love to talk about the transition. I know you just kind of highlighted a few moments with your time in Brazil and how that lit the fire. But I would like to talk about your transformation, because that is something that's pivotal in helping you become that coach for everyone else. So what was that like, going from this accomplished man to this life coach and nomad?
Yeah, thank you so much. I think when I was realizing that I didn't want to stay in academia, I then really had to figure out, well, what did I want to do? And when I thought about it, like as a tenured faculty member, you know, 40% of my job was research. Well, I'm good at academic publishing. I have, you know, four books, but I don't love doing it. And 20% was leadership. I'd been the president of national organizations. I'm good at it, but I don't love it. And 40% was teaching, and I realized there was something there, but it's not the standing in front of a classroom and lecturing, but it was the informal conversations when students had their own questions, like how does this apply to their life? Or when I was working with graduate students working on their MA or their PhD, where they're not doing research under my, you know, umbrella, I'm helping them figure out what are their questions and how they're going to find their own answers. Well, helping you figure out your questions and how you're going to find your own answers, that was life coaching. And so that's what steered me in that direction. And then to answer the nomad piece, part of what I realized is as much as, with research and travel in my life, I'd always enjoyed going places and doing things, but it was really people. I loved understanding, what people thought about and did the same and why and differently and why, and that relationships were what matter most. And so once I left that academic position, which kept me on a very strict schedule, and you can't lecture from the other side of the planet, it was okay, now I have the freedom. And I don't plan to be a nomad indefinitely, but it was a chance to what are events I want to go to? Who are people I want to spend time with? What are things I want to, have a chance to experience now that I don't know I'll get to if I put it off any longer, now that I don't have that restriction as I'm not just rebranding my life, but redesigning my life. And so for a little over 3 years now, I've been a full-time nomad, slowing down a little bit now, but like the last 2 years, I hit four continents a year. And that's sort of how that came about.
Nice. I always talk about traveling with my husband. Like, oh my gosh, like, I want to do this. I want to do that. He's like, okay. First, I had this big idea of when the kids graduate and we'll go see the world when the boys go off and find their own thing. But now it's like, no, let's, start picking a place, even if it's once a year or every other year, and taking the kids with us because my 6-year-old is really into things that I'm actually afraid to go see, like thanks YouTube.
Yeah, I think that's so important though, because just even being exposed to that, there are people who live differently than we do and think about things differently. And whether it's as simple as infrastructure or, architecture or, customs or day-to-day habits, that just there's different ways of being in the world. Like, if you can give a child an exposure to that earlier on, that's such a gift.
I agree. So I want to get into all the things that you are exposed to, but mainly mental health. That is what the show is about. So you and your family and your professions and your academic focuses, how is that shaping your current coaching and your philosophy and your approach with your clients?
Yeah, so my mother, father, and stepmother all had doctorates in psychology and were all practicing therapists at some point in my life. And so I grew up around the idea that, mental health was part of just, trying to maximize your life. And it wasn't stigmatized in my family, at least. I still grew up within larger society. I recognize that mental health gets stigmatized. But that wasn't something I grew up with, as far as my own immediate exposure. And then it was one of my undergraduate degrees, but my master's and my PhD are in psychological anthropology. So it's that permeable border between personality and culture. And I think the really important part I took from that is that there's this vast array of ways that people can think about and do things. And no culture says that all of it is equally legitimate. And so really from this giant arc available, every culture says this much is okay. And a different culture says no, this much. And one it's wider, one it's narrower, one it's a different part of the arc. But what counts as, being typical, atypical, normal in a statistical sense, abnormal, really has to do with fit to your larger context. And so the same things that in our society, so auditory hallucinations, number one symptom of the schizophrenias within Western context. Yet hearing from what could be considered the spirit world is actually a sign of someone who should be, a healer in some indigenous contexts. And so no one thing is inherently healthy, unhealthy, right, wrong, good, bad. It's just how much does it fit within the context you're in and what's the support for it? We don't take a child who's fully normally functioning for their age, but is only because they're young, 2 feet tall, and say they're disabled. And yet, if we have someone who, because of some physical difference, can't reach the top shelf, well, now they're disabled. Why? It's just differently abled, the disability is what society assigns to them. And so I think it's really all of that background that I bring to how I approach individuals and in groups and coaching and speaking, because part of that cultural anthropology framework is there's lots of ways of being in the world, and all are equally valid and equally deserving of dignity.
I love that. And what kept popping up in my mind or while you were talking is you are a person, I'm not gonna say without, maybe you do, I don't know you personally, but I will say with few limitations as far as mindset is concerned because of that. And I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. And I want to be super transparent here. It's not that just I fell into this. I had a family background where, there were mental health issues. When I was an infant, there was a suicide in the family. There are some progressive health issues in different family members. There are learning disabilities within the family. And so it's not that just I lucked into a certain framework. I think the people in my family were called to certain professions because these were things they were facing themselves. And like anything in life, there's opportunities and constraints to every situation. And so I don't like that model of good and bad because it's not necessarily good or bad, but there are constraints and those are real. And I don't want to downplay those. I don't want to fall into that trap of toxic positivity. And at the same time, there are opportunities. And so it's what do we choose to do with those?
Very much I agree with that a lot. I do. Okay, so I do want to get into something here about selective hearing and you being drawn to it. You mentioned that your draw is because its focus is in mental health awareness. So what conversations around mental health do you feel need to be normalized?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that we see a lot is this idea, this hyper-individualism of, you should be able to do it for yourself. You should be able to just, buck up, get on with it, make a go of it, do it all. And not that, you want to, but you should have the capacity. And again, speaking from, a perspective informed by cultural anthropology, that's just not the reality throughout human history or the world. We're a social species. So is it really important to cultivate the resources to support yourself as best you can when sometimes there aren't other people available? Absolutely. And at the same time, no one can do things alone. No one does do things alone. And I think the hyper-individualism around us causes a lot of problems here because just even being honest with people about the struggles is something that we're not used to. And saying that I need support or that, I'm talking to a coach or a therapist or both is somehow seen as a weakness. We don't look at someone who needs glasses to be able to, see the newspaper more clearly and say, they're somehow injured or disabled. And at the same time, if someone needs some type of, whether it's therapeutic or even pharmaceutical support to psychologically be able to function, we somehow stigmatize that as being a problem or unhealthy. And it's really interesting. I had spoken a while back, I'm blanking on his name right now, but he wrote the book Thunderdog. He was or is a blind man who actually led a lot of people down from the 40th floor of the World Trade Center on 9/11. And he was able to navigate without very much trouble because he didn't need all of the lights. And he really has an interesting way of putting it that most of us are, we're the disabled ones, we're dependent on artificial illumination. He isn't. He doesn't need lights to navigate. We do. And so it's really about, what are the things we assign that make something a problem or not? And the one other piece I would add around the mental health struggle today is just how debilitating stress can be. And if you understand how the stress response evolved in us, it's really for life and death circumstances, big bear. Okay, well, either I run away, I bonk it in the head with a rock, or I freeze and hide behind a tree, and I manage to live, or unfortunately, I don't. But either way, the stress then goes away. And so the stress response is meant for real life and death circumstances, but then it actually, all of those stress hormones drain out of the body. but we haven't developed a different nervous system for social stress. And so when there's traffic, when your boss yells at you, when two kids are asking for your attention at the same time, we're actually triggering those same massive stress hormones to flood the body. But when do those stressors ever go away? They don't resolve themselves the way getting away from the bear does. And so we keep flooding our systems with this. Of course, there are mental health challenges. And we know that having that amount of stress really impacts the immune system. So then you're making yourself susceptible to other types of illness, which then adds more stress, et cetera, et cetera.
You said so many things there. I'm like, ooh, that little bing, 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 bing is going off in my head. I'm like, where do I go? Where do I? Okay, I'll go back a few bings to the beginning of your answer, and I will highlight community first.
Sure.
The importance of community. I love that you brought that up. A couple things in there. You highlighted community and hyper independence, where within my community, I had an opportunity to share some things that I share all the time. But because there were people in the room that I admire that have become my mentors that only know this version of me, when I had to talk about the dark stuff, I got nervous. And I was like, well, afterwards, going home, sitting in it for a while, why was I so scared? And it was like, okay, you still have this fear of losing people that you care about, and these people mean a lot to you. So that guard that I thought, that wall that I thought that I have taken down, I realize I've only been kind of like tapping away at, little pieces there. But there's still some work to do, because I was like, okay, I'm really afraid of opening up on a deeper level with these people. I'm really afraid of what they're going to think. I'm really concerned about losing them because they're my mentors. They're people I've come to love and trust. So that was one thing. And then that moved me into wanting to remove myself away from them and jump back on the, I can just do it by myself without my community. So it's like two things you popped in there where I was like, oh, I want to highlight the hyper independence, the importance of community, and also the importance of everything that you just said about us kind of being in fight or flight. I don't think that anyone thinks about that on a daily basis. And I don't think that there is enough. I think there's a lot of education out there, but I don't think it's as accessible. What is up with my language today? Accessible as people. And I also think that there's a lot of things that block us, aka Dr. Google. But I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I'm sure that helps someone a lot, and that will help someone a lot.
Yeah, I hope so. And if I think about who are the people who've made the biggest impact in my life, yeah, sure, I might remember a specific thing they said, or a takeaway lesson, but much more than any particular, phrasing or insight, it's how did they show up? It's who were they as people? And so I think that whatever work I can do for myself and I can support other people to do to get more comfortable in more settings, in more situations, living, connecting, and communicating as authentically as they can, that is what sends out ripples of how they interact with the people around them, which then sends out ripples for the people they interact with. And that's really how we make the world a more caring and connected place, one ripple at a time. And the academic in me can't stand that I can't think of who the author was to give due credit. But I read in a book this idea that instead of that model of ROI as return on investment, ROI is ripples of impact. And so I try to use that as, again, I get overwhelmed too. I'm human. But when I'm not in that space, what are the ripples of impact I want to have here? What are the possibilities? How do I have the ones I want to have as opposed to ones that might happen by accident?
I love that. I want to. Okay, tell me. I've been butchering things all day. I set myself up for that, everybody, by the way. I want to talk about your lifestyle a little bit, but I highlighted this in my notes. Brazilian, it's a dance.
Zouk, Brazilian
Zouk.
Zouk. Yep.
Okay, so I was saying it right in my mind. Look at that. Okay, so now I want to get into movement. I feel like these are all beautiful components, or like people, modalities that can help us improve our mental health. So let's talk about movement, travel, and how these things play a role in your life and in your mental health?
Sure. So I think there's a couple of things here. And one of them, and it's one of the cultural pieces that's so interesting, is, there's a lot of talk now about mind-body connection. And I think that's great work. And yet I would challenge it a little, because saying mind-body connection, implicit to that is that they're separate and we have to bridge them. And if you look at a lot of different indigenous groups in the world, a lot of Eastern philosophies, the word that really existed quite a while before we put an English translation was body mind, or some equivalent of that, where you're not really separating the two. I think that it really goes back, again, not to get too academic about it, but like Descartes and the Enlightenment and the idea of, body and spirituality and the carnal versus the spiritual being separate really has a lingering presence in our culture. And so too often we neglect our bodies and don't recognize the real wisdom. At the same time, we talk about it, we see it in movies, we read about it's like, oh, I felt that tingle in my stomach. Oh, I got tense. Our bodies react to things. Our nervous system reacts to things. And so I think paying attention to our body is so important. Aside from my training and coaching overall, I did train in positive psychology coaching. I also trained in body-oriented coaching because I think it's so important. If you know about the nervous system, there's slightly different nerves that run from the brain to the body versus back up. And the nerves that run from the brain down to the body are more myelinated. The sheath of fat around the nerve is thicker, which means that the signals from the brain to the body go a little faster. And so if we don't actually slow down enough, we don't actually give ourselves a chance to recognize what our bodies are feeling. And so, for example, we hear all the time this idea of, take a deep breath before you respond, decide, act. And yet, when I say take a deep breath, what's the first thing that comes to mind? It's to inhale. If you're already tense, how deeply can you inhale? And so, to the contrary, what I would tell people I work with, again, just as a basic level embodiment practice, when you realize you're in that situation, exhale as deeply as you can. Try and actually wait a second or two after you've finished exhaling. Now inhale. Now get oxygen. And what impact does that have just even on, the polyvagal nerve complex and the system? And you're starting to actually regulate your nervous system for how you respond in the world. And so, like, that's a base level thing. And how often with, whether it's mental health or just daily stress and challenges, are we thinking about how something happened in the past? Are we nervous about how it's going to be received in the future? Which means we're not fully in the moment. Well, if I just even rub my fingertips together lightly enough that I can feel the ridges, if I hold the edge of my pants and just feel the material of the cloth, if I look at the hair of the person I'm talking to, but really try and trace not just it's one color, but like what is every nuance? If I'm looking out the window at a tree, it's not just green leaves. What are all of the different shades of greens and yellows and browns? Anything that's about the senses helps bring us into the right here and now. Now I can respond from what's actually going on now and not the stories I'm telling myself about what's happened in the past, what could happen in the future. And so for me, I'm someone who my mind will run away from me really quickly. I can just overthink anything in split instant. But so something like a partner dance where there's the music, there's the floor, there's the people around us, there's what's my body like right now, there's what's my partner's body like right now, there's how do we communicate non-verbally. It really gives me an opportunity to be fully present, which lets all the other stuff go away for a little while.
So can you paint me a picture of this dance? Because now I have a picture of you dancing in my mind. What is this like for those of us who do not know? What style of dance could you compare this to?
That's a little challenging. A lot of people may have heard about lambada, which is where it is derived from. It can be danced to a very wide variety of musics. The style I prefer is probably a little less on urban hip hoppy side and a bit more on the very flowy side. But one of the things that you see in Brazilian Zouk that you don't see in a lot of other dances are a lot of tilts and big circular head motions. And I can share with you a link to a video if you want.
Okay.
Just taught a workshop actually on finding creativity through limits at a dance workshop, the Netherlands, on Easter weekend.
Okay. I would love to see that video.
Yep.
I love to dance. I haven't been dancing as much as I used to when I was younger lately, but I love to dance. And I heard back in the day I was a pretty good dancer. So, I'm just gonna throw that out there for everybody.
And I would say, whether it's dance or any other art or creative activity, all it takes to be an artist, to be a dancer, to be a creative is to do it. Don't let, someone else's version of whether it's good or bad influence you. If you enjoy it, that's the point of it.
That's why I love watching my kids dance so much. You turn on music and they just start jumping around, flipping. One of my sons likes the air kick, and like he's like, "Look at my moves," And I'm like, "All right, go baby, go." Okay, I want to get into. Oh my goodness, we're like rolling on through. My goodness, for those who feel stuck in their roles and identities, and I feel like this is just common. I, until very recently, was a producer, a mom, a wife, not Julie. I was just all the things. Who are you? Oh, I'm a wife. No. Who are you? Oh, a mom. Who are you? Oh, producer. I do this kind of cool thing. Those of us who feel stuck in these identities, what's one piece of advice you'll offer to help them begin to transform out of a role and into their authentic self so they can live a fulfilling life?
Yeah, so there's really two versions of this. There's sort of a bigger strategic one, and there's a more in the moment tactical one, if you will. Which one do you want, or do you want both? I don't know exactly.
Well, if you're going to give me both, I'm going to definitely take both for sure.
Okay, great. Then let's go with the strategic one first. Again, this isn't mine. I heard it somewhere first, but I think it comes down to that we're human beings, not human doings. And so much of our society is about those accomplishments and what you do. And so I took that to heart and took being, BEING, as the acronym for sort of the approach I use. And I was really, just to drop in a quick story, I was really faced with this when I came back from that research trip in Brazil in the first part of 2019. November of that year, I actually had a bad spinal injury and nerve damage. I couldn't even roll over on a side for 5 weeks, let alone know if I was gonna walk or even dance again. And so it really faced me with that challenge of, do I have the same value as a human being? Do I have the same value? Am I the same Jonathan if I can't do all the things I could do before? And so that really made me go, okay, if being really matters, how can I really onboard that in how I live my life and how I communicate to others? So B is for begin where you are. I think when we know we want something different in our lives, it's much too easy to just sort of jump to anything different. But if you think about whether it's an old-fashioned like map in the mall or whether it's the GPS in your phone or your car, you can't map to a different location if you don't know where you are right now. So begin where you are is about like, what are my resources? What are my skills? What are my strengths? What is the background and the context I do have? So begin where you are. E is explore where you want to go, because it's much too easy to say somewhere else, on vacation, whatever it is. But what does that mean? Where is that else? Some people like to go to the beach. Some people like to go to the mountains. Some people want to go somewhere where there's museums and restaurants. What's right for you may not be what's right for someone else. I think we see that all the time with people who just pursue, say, getting a promotion, even for a job that's not really right for them, but just because they've onboarded and internalized this idea of you're supposed to just move up, even into things that aren't really aligned. So explore where do you really want to go? I is for investigate how you're going to get between the two or identify the route. Because there's never one way to go. Whether it's you like the scenic route, whether it's you want the most direct, whether it's you want to be able to stop and visit people along the way. And if you've identified why you're using what you're using, then you can get to N, now start. Because too often we're so busy trying to get it just right and get the perfect plan and account for everything, that we don't start. But if you've identified what route you're taking and why, there's no reason not to start. There might be detours. I'm driving home from work. Maybe there's road construction. Well, I'm not lost. I know where I started. I know where I'm going. I go around it. Maybe it's not a detour in that sense, but I realize there's an errand half an hour out of my way. I really don't want to do it. But if I have to do a separate trip tomorrow, it's 2 hours. Okay. So there's no reason not to start. And the G is get your best life, not in the sense of you're done and it's complete, but take stock, recognize, the growth, recognize the progress, recognize the tools, the skill set, the system that you've now onboarded and can apply to anything else. So my strategic piece is actually focus on the being part of who you are as a human being.
To piggyback off that, I love this. I don't know who I stole it a long time ago. It's like, I'll do it one day. I'll do it one day. And like, it's because, oh, I got to put this in. I have to do this. And this has to line up with this. And I have to have this amount of this. And it's like, no, you don't. It's like, is it going to be one day or is it going to be 2 day? So I love that.
Can I invite you, whenever we get off the phone, just get a plain piece of paper, take whether it's a bowl or a cup or anything circular, just draw a circle and cut out a circle. And on it, just write TUIT.
Okay.
Because once you've written TUIT, you now have a round to it. So anything that you were putting off until you had could get around to it, now you have a round to it.
Okay, I'm gonna do that and I'm gonna take a picture, post it on social media, and everyone else who just heard that, I want you to do it too. Send me the picture. Round to it.
There's no reason not to, right?
Yeah, when I get around to it. I'm gonna work out
Exactly.
when I get around to it. I'm gonna do it when
Exactly.
I get
Then you have
around
a
to
round
it.
to it and go there. It's your permission to go for it.
I love that.
And so then I would say the tactical piece. I like the being strategy. I think as far as, really designing the most meaningful, rewarding life, it's what I've found worked for me and really supports my clients. And yet, in the moment, things can get overwhelming. Whether it's being pulled in multiple directions and obligations, whether it's just, emotionally being overwhelmed. And so while there's lots of great work out there on like, finding your purpose, finding your why, all the way back to Viktor Frankl and logotherapy. Right now, a lot of people know Simon Sinek. Great work. I recommend all of it. And yet for me, if I'm really in the crunch, I come down to one question: how do I want to be? Because too often in my life, I've looked back on something, whether it's 2 hours, 2 weeks, 2 months, even 2 years later, and say, dang it, I wish I had handled that differently. I wish I'd done something different. I wish I'd said something different. And so if I can focus on how do I want to interact with this person? How do I want to be in this situation? And if I'm really jammed up, then again, that I've regretted things too many times in the past. It's what I now call future casting. I go, looking back on this 5 years from now, how will I have wanted to respond? I stumbled into that one. I didn't have the term future casting yet, but it was the end of what to that point in time had been the most rewarding romantic relationship of my life. And it caught me by surprise when it ended. And it was long distance and it was on the phone. And I remember I was still recovering from the back injury. I had tears streaming down my face. And she was like, anything else at the moment? Should we just check in next week? I said, no, give me a minute. And I realized that I wasn't going to have this opportunity again. This moment was never going to exist again. And so somehow it was a very powerful, impactful, special relationship. And I said to her, I want to thank you for everything we've shared and all of the experiences and learning and lessons. But most of all, I want to thank you for being you. And while it was, really heartbreaking and devastating to lose the relationship at the time, I don't look back on it with any regrets about how I showed up. And it was only later that I figured out that was future casting, because what I was aware of in the moment is how am I going to have wanted to have dealt with this situation? So the tactical piece, how do I want to be? And if you really have to, looking back on this, how will I have wanted to have dealt with this?
I have to ask you a question. And
Yes.
I haven't asked it. I used to end every show with this question, but I stopped kind of asking it and just worked it throughout the show. I want to ask you, what does selective hearing mean to you? And I just would love to hear your response to that.
Yeah, again, I think of it in two ways. And this is part of, again, just seeing things from different perspectives, right? So, as I'd referred to before, to me, there's a opportunity and a constraint in everything. So there can be the constraint, selective hearing, when it's not deliberate, when it's not intentional, when it's just because of, what's habit, what are patterns for me, what are the labels I'm familiar with. And so I miss things because I'm selecting the things that are like, the meanings that I choose, or maybe not even consciously recognize that I'm choosing to hear. And so that can be a limit. And at the same time, there's also the opportunity because I can also actively select which parts of things I want to focus on. Do I want to focus on the constraints? We all face limits. We all face obstacles and challenges in life. Do I want to focus on the limits, or do I want to actually select what are the opportunities here? What are the ways I can be creative? What are the lessons? How can I learn? How can I grow? How can I do better? So, for example, if I didn't have not his fault. My advisor, when I was doing my PhD, got life-threatening cancer. So obviously not a chosen thing. He ended up being fine, but I really didn't have good advising while I was working on my degree. So then when I became a faculty member and had my own PhD students, do I say, well, I didn't have the support, so why should I spend my time giving them? Or do I say, no, what would have been helpful to me? And let me do that. And so then I can select, what do I want to take from my own background, my own experiences, and, what do I want to, like, lots of times, we listen to what happens around us, but how many times do we really hear what's going on for people, what they're saying, what this means? So I can choose what I want to hear, and that's the opportunity in selective hearing.
Before we go, I would like to, first of all, thank you for being here and having this beautiful conversation with me. And also, I would like you to share with the listeners how they can connect with you so they can work with you.
Yeah, my pleasure. And thank you so much for having me on and the opportunity to share. And again, it goes back to those ripples of impact. And there are so many people who've had such an impact on me, and I'm just hoping to do them justice in how I pass it on. My website is stepsalongtheway.global. Again, steps along the way, because I think how we each get to where we are in our life are the steps we've taken, and how we live our best, most fulfilling, meaningful lives is being deliberate and intentional about the steps we take next. So one word, stepsalongtheway.global. Global, both my cultural anthropology background, but also I'm a nomad. And then if I could, if anyone just wants a 30-minute, no strings attached, no sales push, chance to just talk about maybe a next step for them, stepstochat.com. I'm happy to have a conversation with anyone. And finally, not active yet, but you said this will air in a few weeks. It should be active by next week. Just a free download, forwardstep.com is a sort of a wellness workbook, totally free resource that I hope just is support for people out there. And again, all of it just links through stepsalongtheway.global.
Well, everyone, you heard that from Jonathan, and I will also share that information in the show details and at selectivehearingshow.com on the resource page. So here is what I love to tell you each and every week. There's no excuses. And Jonathan just gave you a beautiful B, begin. So I will be back next week with a brand new episode. So until then, this is Selective Hearing.